Air America Radio News, I'm Bill Crowley. George Bush is upping the pressure on North Korea not to test fire a new long-range missile. At a joint news conference with Japan's visiting leader, Bush said a launch would be unacceptable. He says other countries are understandably suspicious of North Korea's intentions. Bush says North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il has refused to explain what is on top of the missile or what direction it would be fired. Lawyers for Guantanamo Bay detainees are hoping the Supreme Court ruling today rejecting the idea of military trials will put more pressure on the Bush administration to close the controversial prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. An Army major representing one of the inmates predicts some fallout that he says may very well lead to the closing of Guantanamo in the near future. Others say a shutdown is not likely anytime soon. Bush's spokesman, Tony Snow, said Bush still wants to close the facility at Gitmo once the administration can determine what to do with the prisoners. Amnesty International says the ruling does not address the jail's future, but it stops dead in its tracks what the group's legal director calls sham trials. An international rights expert at Northwestern University says the Bush administration will have to come up with another approach to try the detainees under the military justice system. George Bush, meanwhile, suggesting he will ask the approval of Congress to try to put terror suspects on trial before the tribunals, telling reporters the administration will see if there's latitude to work with Congress on the issue. He said he hadn't been fully briefed of the ruling. Bush said, though, it won't cause, quote, killers to be put out on the street. The High Court found that Bush's proposed trials for some detainees at Guantanamo are illegal under U.S. law and international Geneva conventions. Another suicide car bomb, this one at a funeral, killed four people in Iraq today. The attacker, police said, blew himself up in a tent where mourners had gathered for a service for a Shiite soldier in the northern city of Kirkuk. In addition to those who died today, six more bodies found dumped in Iraq. Palestinian officials say Israeli artillery fire has plunged parts of the Gaza Strip into darkness, and Israeli planes are hitting targets inside Gaza. Shells hit two power transformers, damaging the electricity distribution network. The Israeli army says they were firing at the time, but it was targeting in open areas. Israeli warplanes knocked out power to most of Gaza at the beginning of the military operation. This is Air America Radio News.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show, sitting in for Mike Malloy. That's me, Laura Flanders, here on Air America Radio. You can call us on 866-303-2270 and join the blog at radionation.org. Tonight, White House crimes and misdemeanors and a court majority's last hurrah. On tonight's program, we'll talk to CIA intelligence veteran Mel Goodman about the Supreme Court decision in Hamdan v. Rumsfeld. Is it a big slapdown for the crime family, or can the president's lawyers find a way to wiggle through? Also on the Gitmo verdict, you tell me, what do you think the Bush-Cheney lawyers are up to tonight? And what does the decision reveal about what's at stake this fall? All that and an update on e-voting from Brad Friedman, who hosted two public hearings on the subject in Los Angeles and San Diego this week. And finally, Dave Zirin, the Nation magazine's man on politics and sports. Does soccer bring us all together or put us at each other's throats? And if so, so what? All that and your calls coming up. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio.
The court said you can't evade American law and international law, and the Geneva Conventions and all its protections apply to everything that you do wherever you do it. It is this unbelievable reaffirmation of the rule of law.
That was Barbara Olshansky of the Center for Constitutional Rights speaking with Air America's own Christabel Nsiabwadi, responding to the Guantanamo decision earlier today. Well, as far as I can see, the Bush crime family got unlucky. Their supreme team, if you will, was down one man. In Hamdan v. Rumsfeld, the Supremes ruled that the president acted illegally when the White House created special tribunals for Guantanamo terror suspects and anyone else they wanted to throw into that category. As a result, the court said in a 5-3 ruling, the tribunals, as prepared, as created by the White House, violated both the Constitution and the U.S. military's obligations under Geneva. Clearly, the crime family is thinking of ways to spin this verdict. And one of my questions to you tonight is, what do you think their legal team is up to at this hour? It is going to be a long night in the White House bunker for sure. Now, constitutional lawyers, including Barbara Olshansky and the folks at the Center for Constitutional Rights, who have been the advocates defending the rights of the detainees and pushing the administration into court on this issue, they were cheering this morning. And you just heard Barbara Olshansky. The president must now try detainees in lawful U.S. courts or release them, they said. The game is up. But as the day wore on, the White House snow machine went into overdrive. And by this evening, there was suddenly on the evening news reports all sorts of complexity and confusion surrounding the court's decision. For example, was it an order or was it a guideline? And can it be fixed with a little help from Congress? That's what White House Press Secretary Tony Snow suggested, and Hill Republicans are probably still scuttling about to come up with a congressional fix tonight. Here's Tony Snow speaking this morning in response to the decision at the court.
One of the most important things for the court in the majority opinion today was to get some congressional authorization. Members of Congress, including Senator Graham on TV, have stepped forward and said that they'd be happy to work on that process. The president said he's willing to work with Congress on authorization to figure out how to move forward in a way consistent with the ruling handed down by the court.
Well, apart from the sort of insulting gift to the nation that the president is willing to work with Congress on actually getting authorization for this program that, as currently constituted, the Supreme Court has said is utterly illegal, there are some huge differences in what the White House spin crew, and Tony Snow there, as you know, is the White House press secretary, are saying about this decision versus what other people are saying was handed down. The number is 866-303-2270. I'd love to hear from you what you're making of this. 866-303-AAR0. Was it a huge defeat for the crime family, or are we going to see a kind of a confusion surround this and a fix be dreamt up in Congress that will put the question of appliance of Geneva on hold? I'd love to hear from you. 866-303-2270. And a lighter note, I'd love to know what you think the lawyers are doing this evening, because I think they're tearing out their hair. As usual, our president, I should say, I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy, and we are blogging at a very special website, a very, very special site, at RadioNation.org. It is the blog site for the show that I do weekends here on Air America. That's RadioNation.org. Just follow the links up on the upper right-hand side. You're getting the habit now, I think. And join the bloggers there. We had quite the blog last night. Hundreds of bloggers participating in a conversation that, well, went everywhere, didn't it? All right. We will hear in a minute from the president. I want you to listen very carefully. As usual, Mr. W over there is going for the big lie, the really big lie about what happened today and what has brought us to this place. Here he is speaking about the Hamdan decision, which I really think we should refer to as the Rumsfeld decision, and Rumsfeld lost, at a joint press conference with the Japanese president earlier today. Cut 7.
One thing I'm not going to do, though, is I'm not going to jeopardize the safety of the American people. People got to understand that. I understand we're in a war on terror, that these people were picked up off of a battlefield, and I will protect the people and at the same time conform with the findings of the Supreme Court.
All right, so how many things are wrong with that sentence? How many things are not wrong with that sentence? Battlefield? These people were picked up on a battlefield? We don't know everything about these people, but we do know, speaking of the detainees, the, well, originally 759 detainees from 49 countries that have been held at Guantanamo Bay. We know from a cross-section of data that has been released, courtesy of folks like the Center for Constitutional Rights, that 86% of the detainees were not captured on any battlefield by U.S. forces. They were turned over by Pakistani police and ex-Taliban Afghans. They could be the sheepherder who touched up your daughter. They could be the guy who cheated you at the bazaar. There is no evidence that the vast majority of the people in Guantanamo were, as Bush puts it, picked up on a battlefield. In fact, there's evidence to the contrary. We know, for example, about those who were released to the UK that one of them, at least, had been picked up in an African country. Another one, I think, had been picked up in Eastern Europe somewhere. Big lie number one. Secondly, his tone. Look, I'm not going to jeopardize the safety of the American people. So, like, I'll do what I have to, but I'm only going to do it up to a point where I consider the Supreme Court and Congress and the Constitution messes with my, as I interpret it, protection of the safety of the American people. Well, then, I'm not going to obey. He says, one thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to jeopardize the safety of the American people. I'll protect the people. At the same time, conform with the findings of the Supreme Court. Now, A, it should be no favor that he's doing us that he's going to adhere to the Supreme Court. He's acting like he's going to take the great stretch of conforming with the Supreme Court. Well, Mr. President, that isn't your choice. That's not the way the Constitution works. You don't get to pick and choose and then say, you know what, I'll do you the favor of obeying the court. You have to obey the court, just like you have to obey the Constitution. You remember that moment, that rainy, miserable day right after your motorcade got egged in January 2001? That miserable, rotten day of inauguration, 2001, when you put your hand, Mr. President, up on, I guess it was the Bible. That's what they told us it was. We don't actually know for sure. And you said you promised to, you swear to uphold the Constitution. That's what we were talking about. You don't get to try to score points for conforming with the Supreme Court. It's the law. Secondly, I mean, maybe he's telling us he only has one hand with fingers crossed behind his back like he does when he signs congressional acts into law? What is he doing with this attitude? And the last thing is keep us safe. I will protect the people. Well, ahem. I don't know where you are listening to this program, but where I am listening to this program, people just a few miles from here are up to their noses in water. Electricity cables are flying about, crackling all the while. 12 are dead. I'm talking about the floods in the Northeast. And the National Guard have been dragged once again off their jobs, some of them just back, you know, recently from Iraq and Afghanistan. Across the country, homelessness is up, wages are down. We are hated in more parts than any beer can possibly reach. Just what exactly is this president keeping us safe from? Oh, I forgot. He's keeping us safe from the New York Times. Well, I have completely flipped in my view on the New York Times decision, and I'll tell you about that when I come back. I am beginning to think maybe the Republicans have a point. 866-303-2270. Maybe reporters who endanger national security should go to jail. And I've got a few nominations. 866-303-2270. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. You're listening to Air America Radio. What do you think the crime family lawyers are doing tonight? What do you think this decision? Is it a wiggleable decision? And what about this president's claim to protect you? Is he protecting you? And what is he protecting you from tonight? I'm Laura Flanders. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You fool. You fool. You're crazy fool. Look what you have done.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the Forward, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first four issues free.
Call now, 800-858-5800 for The Forward. That's 800-858-5800. 5800.
assure you that we take them very seriously. Two, that to the extent that there is latitude to work with the Congress to determine whether or not the military tribunals will be an avenue in which to give people their day in court, we will do so.
That was the president speaking about the Supreme Court decision in the case Hamdan v. Rumsfeld. They ruled today that the president acted illegally in the creation of special tribunals for Guantanamo terror suspects. The big thing I want you folks to keep clear in your mind is that the interpretation of this ruling, 5-3, as far as I can see, remains pretty open. The interpretation all morning was that the justices had ruled that indeed, not just Guantanamo, but overall, U.S. military rules must abide by all the appropriate articles of the Geneva Convention, and that what the president was up to not only violated U.S. military rule, but also the Geneva Convention. Lawyers came out of the original press conference from this morning saying this was a clear victory for Geneva. This afternoon, after 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 hours of spin by Tony Snow and the president, not to mention the GOP Republicans, suddenly they're saying all the court wants is for Congress, not the White House, to establish the rules by which these military tribunals go forth. I don't believe we should be distracted into the details here before we have had a full discussion of the decision itself. This is a 79-page decision. And I think we are now being dragged by the White House into the murky realm of detail and congressional fixes, when a congressional fix, it seems to me, is not all the Supreme Court was calling for. What it seems to me is that the Supreme Court was slapping down this unitary executive power overreach. All of those things. And saying, not so fast, Mr. President. There is a constitution to obey. And this country's laws are in compliance with international conventions, are supposed to be in compliance with international conventions, which we have signed. I'll take some of your calls, but I really see a sort of spiraling away from the central fact going on in the discussion of this decision. And one more thing, and I will go back to the New York Times like everybody else at some point this evening, but one more thing. For progressives, I think this is a sober moment. Because before we get too cheery about this court verdict, I think we need to consider that this could potentially be really the last hurrah for this particular majority on this court. I mean, the irony is the majority would have been way slimmer, like 5-4, if Bush's Judge Roberts hadn't had to recuse himself because he'd already taken a side on the case when he sat on an appellate court hearing on it. In fact, he took the side that the majority of his fellow justices today called a violation. It's a sober moment. If it hadn't been for that, it would have been a slimmer decision. And if one judge changes, even this majority flies out the window. The Bush cabal is in a majority, and we've seen it this week on redistricting, on Vermont, campaign spending limits, on the money and political power issues. They were able to swing the verdict their way only on this, on made-up special tribunals in violation of American military law in Geneva, were they just one overreach too far. And the opposing team was a man down. I reckon we got lucky. The administration at this hour is busy. And I would suggest to you, if you need fuel for this fall's elections, here it is. You've got your representatives and your senators coming back home for the break this July 4th. This is a time for you to refocus on what is at stake this fall. The not very liberal, but at least not actually fascist majority still held today. But for how much longer? For how much longer? And the White House is still beating up on the New York Times. I'm for it now. I'm for it. Let's pile on. All right, I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. We'll take a break. We'll come back with your calls. And a little bit later, we'll hear the latest on e-voting from Brad Friedman, who's been hosting public meetings in San Diego and L.A. on this subject and has got quite a bit to report. 866-303-2270. Check out the blog at radionation.org. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Laura Flanders. This Independence Day, hundreds of people from across the United States will be trying to draw attention to the suffering of Iraqi citizens and U.S. soldiers by beginning a historic hunger strike against the occupation in Iraq. Dick Gregory's doing it. Cindy Sheehan's doing it. They're going to be eating their final meal in front of the White House July 3rd. I'm supporting them. You can too. Find out more on www.troopshomefast.org. That's troopshomefast.org. For Code Pink, I'm Laura Flanders.
Entrepreneur. Smart word. So smart, it's almost a different language. Look it up. Here at Budget Rent-A-Car, we admire entrepreneurs, and not just for their bilingual skills, but also for their courage, and for the big thinking they show by opening a small business and joining the Budget Business Program. Yes, the Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. That's $2 back every day. No wonder Budget won the 2006 Entrepreneur Magazine Business Travel Award as the best car rental value for small businesses. Such an entrepreneur thing to do. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business to sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent Budget and rent like a genius.
Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Are you as alarmed as I am by the assault on our freedoms by the religious right? An essential element of freedom is the right to choose or reject religious beliefs. And this is why I fully support the Freedom From Religion Foundation as it takes the lead in challenging the growing threat from the religious right in the United States. If you'd like further information on the dangers of living in a theocracy, please call 800-335-4021. 800-335-4021 or visit their website, ffrf.org.
lot of it really is procedural. It has to do with congressional authorizations, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and so on.
The steps that you guys bypassed.
Well, and so those are not going to be bypassed in the future, and there's a disagreement. The Supreme Court has rendered its decision.
Yeah, those little, codes of law that we bypassed, we're going to go back and bypass them again. That was Tony Snow, White House press secretary, responding to the Supreme Court decision in the case of the Guantanamo detainee, Hamdan, in the case Hamdan v. Rumsfeld. The number is 866-303-2270. I'm Laura Flanders. I'm urging us to be clear. I'm urging us to keep our eyes on what was actually said by the Supreme Court, which was not that there was a procedural error, an oversight, and that they were issuing a guideline which they hope Congress can help the White House fix. The Supreme Court very clearly and in very sober language, 70-something pages, shredded each of the administration's allegations, including the assertion that Congress had stripped the court of jurisdiction, and they required, the Supreme Court repudiated, I should say, the Bush administration's entire plan to put these detainees before special military commissions. They ruled that the commissions were unauthorized by federal statute, U.S. military law, or international law. They were illegal under all of those things. And yet the White House now wants to say, well, we can find a little fix on Congress, on Capitol Hill. Congress will help us fix this, and it's only a guideline anyway. And then there's the president saying, well, he'll obey up to the point where, you know, he has to protect the people. All right, let's take some of your calls. Quickly, we'll go through a few of them. Rocco in Rosendale, New York. How is it up there?
Oh, it's a little bit rainy up here, but what are you going to do? You know, the whole thing is that what he did was illegal, so wouldn't they be looking to defend against that? After all, it was the whole administration. Didn't Bush even say that if anybody in his administration did anything illegal, they wouldn't serve there? Does that include him?
Well, I mean, there's no question. Here they're saying it's illegal on a variety of fronts. And we will get into this more with a lawyer who knows better what he's talking about, Mel Goodman, later on in the program.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, the evidence of illegal action by this unitary executive president is just mounting higher and higher.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I mean, he's saying he's protecting us. The only way he can, every day he's in office, he doesn't protect us.
Right. In fact, I get to feel more and more in danger. Thanks for the call, Rocco. I hope the waters don't rise too high there in Rosendale. Barbara's on the line in Seattle. Hey, Barbara.
Hi, Laura. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Okay. On the Supreme Court thing,
mm-hmm.
Bush doesn't want us to read all 90 whatever pages it
is. It's only 70-something.
Find something out.
Mm-hmm.
And all he's looking for is for his buddies in Congress and a few dinos to basically overrule what he's been presented with, so we can kind of move on and he can continue to do what he wants. But that whole thing is kind of quasi-encouraging of the Supreme Court. The non-Bush appointees actually do respect the Constitution, or at least they're giving that impression.
Yeah, I mean, for the moment, the majority hung in there, but it's important to realize just how fragile this majority today was.
It's,
I mean, it sounds
fragile.
Big, 5-3, but it was with Roberts off the court, and we know Ginsburg's not well.
Right.
This is not a safe situation, and a lot of people looked at the court this week and said, oh, well, they made all these decisions we disagreed with at the earlier part of the week, and then this part of the week, this decision was one that seems to have struck the White House a blow. But I think the simple explanation is that on this overreach by the executive, even those kind of on-the-fence liberal justices said too much. I'm not going to go.
Yeah, he wants to just totally take over the world. Do you have a minute for me to comment on the New York Times issue also?
Sure.
Since you're
I'm flipping. I'm saying they should all go to jail. And
yes.
I'll tell you who I think should go first.
Don't flip.
Judith Miller should go, and Bob Novak should go.
Well, the thing is with the New York Times thing, the Canadians are getting pretty upset now because they are saying that information appears maybe to have been requested by this government of Canadian citizens, which violated their rights to privacy. And there's a group that, the mass transfer of data from a office called SWIFT,
mm-hmm.
Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications, based in Brussels.
Right, that's it.
Yeah, and there was a request made for the U.S. subsidiary of SWIFT to turn over much of stuff. Well, now the Belgians are looking at it that some of their citizens' rights may have been violated too, which brings up a really good point that Bush doesn't care whose rights he violates. Ours is a given, but I think it's time it's known that he's violating the rights of other citizens in other countries, and I think that has to stop.
Yeah, I mean, why they've got so hot under the collar around this decision is that it's not just violating the rights of you and me and the Quaker Peace Group down in Florida and the folks who were fighting against student recruiting on the Berkeley campus.
Yes. Yes.
For once, it is actually bankers and mm-hmm. the corporate cronies of this administration mm-hmm. who are realizing, heck, our bank system, and you're right, SWIFT is the international agency here, is surveilling us without a warrant. Now, I think it's fascinating that on this case, the congressional Republicans and the White House are rushing into such overdrive to blame the media, but it's clearly a traffic redirection effort. We want to decoy you from blaming us
right.
for revealing
right.
your your details to blame the media, which has put you in this fix that you now have to deal with this fact. And the other part, of course, as we've been talking all week, is about, everybody's favorite scapegoat. You've tried gays, you've tried immigrants, poor women. The other great scapegoat is the media, most specifically the New York Times.
Yes.
So it serves lots of different functions. But you're right. Now they've got a trouble on their hands.
Well, yeah, and it's about time Bush, it gets pointed out even more, the number of executive orders Bush has signed. And the number of, what do they call them, signings?
But
don't do this and don't do that and don't do that.
The number of laws he's not really signed. 750,
yeah.
According to the Boston Globe.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
All this needs to get out.
We're trying to get it out. Thanks for the call. Let's go
for it.
Chris in Miami. Chris is on the line in Miami. Welcome to the program. Let me get you up here. There you are.
Hello, Laura.
Hey.
Hello, Laura.
Yes, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me. Hey, I appreciate you calling the Bush crime family. These people are degenerate freaks. They've rigged the elections. They've rigged the media. They've rigged the courts. You know, I mean, spade calling is appreciated.
Well, hey, I got it from Mike.
Well, they are, though. These people should be in prison. This guy's a degenerate freak, and, there are...
Now, wait a minute. There isn't jail time for degenerate freaks. This is the president on hyper-overdrive violation of our Constitution. Degenerate freaks, I would defend their rights to stay out of jail.
Yeah. Well, we have, unfortunately, we have liberal talk show hosts during the day that don't call them as they are, and they're hurting us tremendously.
Well, I'm not even going to go there.
Yeah, but these guys have perverted Christianity. Everything they say, it's the opposite. It's doublespeak. It's like 1984. George Orwell was a genius.
All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
All right, let's take one more call. Fran's on the line in South Carolina. Hi, Fran.
Hi, Laura.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm all right.
Indeed. Just a quick thought for you.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, King George thinks he's protecting us from the rest of the world or whatever. I think the other way around, that he should be protecting us from him and his guilty conscience.
Well, you know what? I think that we are doing, what do they say in alcohol programs? You know, it's insanity to do the same thing over again and expect a different result. We keep expecting this guy to abide by our rights, obey our rights. You're absolutely right. He has no intention of doing any of that. It's insane for us to keep expecting that he is going to do anything good for us. His only service is to those making, basically turning our public coffers, our national treasure, people and money and resources into their personal piggy bank. And it's not going to change until we get rid of him. And it's not going to change until we have real people with spine there in Congress who will only get there if they're forced there by people like yourself in the streets and on their offices and at their front doors. So, he should be protecting us from himself, but he won't. So we have to. Thanks for the call, Fran. We're going to take a break. When we come back, are our elections safe? Well, if you've been listening to the program, the process is certainly not. E-voting, there were hearings on the subject, public hearings in L.A. and San Diego this week, in part because Californians are up in arms about what looks as if it happened, what did happen, to corrupt the system this past June. Oh, earlier this June in the 50th Congressional District there in the Bill Bray-Busby race. We'll hear from Brad Friedman, who made an appearance today on Lou Dobbs, and find the latest on how the folks of California are responding to a scandal that might mean that one single person with the right kind of technology could skew an election result this fall. 866-303-2270. We'll be right back.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Look at your radio. Kind of cool, right? From somewhere far, far away, progressive voices are beamed directly to wherever you are on Air America Radio. You know, there's so much to say. We've tried archiving previous shows inside that radio of yours. We've tried stuffing it full of video feeds of Al Franken, Jerry Springer, The Majority Report, and more. But that part doesn't seem to be working. So the really great stuff that won't fit inside your radio is available right now from Air America Premium. We tried stuffing the homepage in your radio, but that didn't work either. So please use your computer instead. Find out about Air America Premium today at airamericaradio.com.
The point of commercials is, of course, to get you to do something. For example, we'd like you to go to geico.com and get a free rate quote. But if you're still not reaching for your mouse, at least do this for me. Call a friend who has Geico and ask some questions. Can Geico really save me that much money? Is their claim service as good as, well, they claim? Are they really available 24/7? Once you get your answers, we'll be right here.
Go to geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
You can change the software, you can infect the system with a virus. There's all sorts of ways that you can affect these machines using these infrared ports and other wireless devices.
That's our guest, Brad Friedman. He was on Lou Dobbs tonight, and the report he was part of had to do with e-voting. Our next guest says that the election between Busbury and Bilbray in California's 50th was a kind of line-in-the-sand moment for our elections, a chance to prove that our electronic voting system wasn't broken. But when the results of the race for the seat once occupied by Randy Duke Cunningham came out, it was revealed that Brian Bilbray, described as a racist and corrupt Republican, had won the vote over Francine Busby. Now, Bilbray was sworn in June 13th and was there today to vote for criminalizing reporters who reveal state secrets. But Brad Friedman, along with other democracy rights advocates, has no confidence in the election result, and he's been part this week of not one but two public hearings with Californians mobilizing to figure out a response. Brad, welcome to the program.
Hey, Laura, thank you very much. And I saw you on Lou Dobbs not long ago.
We're just taking over.
What's that?
We're just taking over.
We are indeed, and you look great, and great to talk to you.
Well, you looked great yourself, so mutual appreciation here, and thank you, Lou Dobbs, and that's you better watch out. It's going to be all progressive media all the time if you don't be careful.
Yeah, so here I may be back on there tomorrow night, so watch out.
Very good. Now, for those who didn't see that report, it has to do with the accessibility of certain voting machines to interference by wireless devices. Can you explain?
About 2 days ago, a report from the Brennan Center at NYU came out, and it took a look at and talked about more than 120 threats to these e-voting machines that are now proliferating the country. You know, this is the first year that the Help America Vote Act kicks in, which means that all over the country this year, we are having these electronic voting machines proliferate in every state and county virtually in the country. The problem is the machines are largely untested. They're very poorly built. They use the secret software that folks can't get at. And so the Brennan Center, a year-long study with computer scientists and security experts, took a look at these systems and found that every single one of them virtually has very dangerous vulnerabilities that are simply not being taken care of. And in this case, the Lou Dobbs report you're talking about, they were looking at the wireless issues and how these machines, again, different brands, whether it's Diebold or ES&S or Sequoia and so forth, many of them have a wireless capability, which means a wireless modem, an infrared port, and in fact, in some cases, you can have a voter walk up with a PDA, personal, you know, Palm Pilot, and affect the very voting machine that they're using, theoretically injecting a virus or tampering in any other way with these machines. It's incredible, and it's amazing that we are going to be using these things in our elections in November, much less the fact that we've been using them over the past several months since we've begun the primary races back March 7th, starting in Texas.
Now, we had the Brennan Center for Justice on the program, I think it was a couple of days ago, and their researchers on this were some of the most sober and respected professionals in their field, including software experts from the White House until recently. This was not a radical crew. The reaction, of course, in California to the election in the 50th has been enormous. A lot of people organized. They were hoping for change. This was an important election with a lot of eyes on it. Could the Democrats take this Republican seat? Would the Republicans pay for the corruption scandal that took down Duke Cunningham? There was a lot riding it, a lot of people utterly outraged. We spoke to Mimi Kennedy of Progressive Democrats for America on Monday. How were these hearings that took place this week?
Well, they were very interesting. We had good crowds and folks who have really had it with this. I mean, what we're looking at out here in this situation is the first federal race to have occurred since these incredible vulnerabilities were found in just the past really two or three months in specifically the Diebold voting systems. And down there in San Diego where this race ran, it was all Diebold, both optical scan and touchscreen systems. Now, when these vulnerabilities were discovered just a few months ago, the California state and the federal body that oversees certification went into sort of an emergency mode to deal with these vulnerabilities that were discovered. They put out special security mitigation procedures that needed to be followed or the machines would be decertified. And amongst those requirements was that once the systems were programmed for the election, they had to be stored securely. Then we discovered, and I broke this on Brad Blog the day after the election, that these machines were all sent home with poll workers for days and weeks at a time. Now, what we've learned is that specifically the Diebold machines, and in particular their touchscreen machines, can, in 2 minutes' time, no password necessary if someone has physical access, their software, the software, election software, operating system, and computer firmware can be completely overwritten.
And you kind of tend to have physical access if the machine's there at home with you.
Well, at home with you, in your car. I mean, I talked to a San Diego County registrar down there, Michael Haas, and I said, well, do you consider storage in someone's car to be secure? And he said, well, no, we certainly don't. And I said, well, then you agree that these machines became decertified according to the federal standards as soon as they were stored in someone's car. He said, no. And I said, well, that's exactly what the rules say. And he said, well, storage in cars isn't the most secure, but it can be secure. So, I mean, these machines were 100% decertified when they were used in this bellwether race, the only federal race that millions of dollars from both parties went into, as you say, a bellwether race to, get the momentum going, as it were, for November, when, guess what, 435 of these things are going to be happening on the same day.
This is Brad Friedman. You can find his work at bradblog.com. He's been covering this case since it happened, this election. 15 seconds, Brad, what can people do?
Well, right now they can go to velvetrevolution.us, sign the No Confidence Pledge, and demand a manual hand count of these paper ballots down there in San Diego so we know who actually won or lost.
Brad Friedman, thank you so much. www.velvetrevolution.us. It's great to hear your voice. Been a long time since we were in Crawford together.
It has indeed.
I remember it well. I hope we get to see each other soon. We'll be back in just a bit, folks. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Mike Malloy. Brad Friedman there, velvetrevolution.us or bradblog.com. Coming up, we'll hear more about the Supreme Court decision and also have a little bit of discussion about politics and sports. 866-303-2270.
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking. As in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent budget and rent like a genius.
Air America Radio News, I'm Bill Crowley. George Bush is upping the pressure on North Korea not to test fire a new long-range missile. At a joint news conference with Japan's visiting leader, Bush said a launch would be unacceptable. He says other countries are understandably suspicious of North Korea's intentions. Bush says North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il has refused to explain what is on top of the missile or what direction it would be fired. Lawyers for Guantanamo Bay detainees are hoping the Supreme Court ruling today rejecting the idea of military trials will put more pressure on the Bush administration to close the controversial prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. An Army major representing one of the inmates predicts some fallout that he says may very well lead to the closing of Guantanamo in the near future. Others say a shutdown is not likely anytime soon. Bush's spokesman, Tony Snow, said Bush still wants to close the facility at Gitmo once the administration can determine what to do with the prisoners. Amnesty International says the ruling does not address the jail's future, but it stops dead in its tracks what the group's legal director calls sham trials. An international rights expert at Northwestern University says the Bush administration will have to come up with another approach to try the detainees under the military justice system. George Bush, meanwhile, suggesting he will ask the approval of Congress to try to put terror suspects on trial before the tribunals, telling reporters the administration will see if there's latitude to work with Congress on the issue. He said he hadn't been fully briefed of the ruling. Bush said, though, it won't cause, quote, killers to be put out on the street. The High Court found that Bush's proposed trials for some detainees at Guantanamo are illegal under U.S. law and international Geneva conventions. Another suicide car bomb, this one at a funeral, killed four people in Iraq today. The attacker, police said, blew himself up in a tent where mourners had gathered for a service for a Shiite soldier in the northern city of Kirkuk. In addition to those who died today, six more bodies found dumped in Iraq. Palestinian officials say Israeli artillery fire has plunged parts of the Gaza Strip into darkness, and Israeli planes are hitting targets inside Gaza. Shells hit two power transformers, damaging the electricity distribution network. The Israeli army says they were firing at the time, but it was targeting in open areas. Israeli warplanes knocked out power to most of Gaza at the beginning of the military operation. This is Air America Radio News.
really getting into it. And yes, I think it's Pink Floyd. Is that what I was told? All right. So it's not, Brahms or something. But it still has that sort of royal, regal entry parade feel. And I'm floating on it. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Mike, where are you? I hope you're not either in the Grand Canyon where there are flames or on the two coasts where there are floods. And don't you worry, the president's got your back. He's not going to let any harm come to any hair on your head. And Mike has a lot of hair on his head, if you haven't seen the pictures. All right, 866-303-2270. We are blogging and streaming at a site you may not be familiar with, but you should be. RadioNation.org. It's the website for the radio show that I do here on Air America Radio weekends, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. RadioNation.org. I should say you can also write to me. I don't think I mentioned that before. Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at AirAmericaRadio.com. And thank you, everybody, for your emails this week. It's been a pleasure getting to know some of you week-time listeners. Again, that's Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at AirAmericaRadio.com. A little bit later in the hour, we'll be joined by somebody I really want you to meet. Dave Zirin is the sports columnist for the Prince George's Post in Maryland. He writes a weekly column, Edge of Sports, and he's got a book out, What's My Name, Fool? Sports and Resistance in the U.S. But Dave is way more than a sports commentator, as you'll hear, and he writes a regular column in The Nation magazine, really pondering the passion that we bring to sports and what it reflects about our politics and whether we could bring a similar kind of passion to the political arena. He's got a lot of thoughts, for example, on that Busby-Bilbray race, spineless Democrats, the Supreme Court, the Guantanamo ruling, immigration, and, yes, the World Cup. Does it stir up national divides or bring the world together? And does it matter? 866-303-2270. I haven't heard from anybody. I want to hear the blow-by-blow scenario. You could even do role play, if you like, of what you think is happening tonight in Dick Cheney's bunker or Alberto Gonzalez's hole or whatever kind of Bush Cheney crime family holdout they have, where the lawyers are detained and kept until they come out with a way for this administration to wiggle out of its responsibilities under the Constitution and international law. The Supreme Court today, 5-3, said the administration was in violation of two things. The violation of the rules of Congress and violation of Geneva, international law. The administration all day have been pounding, this is a problem we can fix by just getting approval from Congress. Okay, so we overreached in establishing these military tribunals without the proper kind of congressional approval. We can fix that. And a lot of Republicans on the Hill at this hour are trying to do exactly that. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is already saying he's going to be pushing legislation allowing the president to use these military tribunals to prosecute suspects now held at Guantanamo Bay. They're responding quickly, and they're going to rush this through, and we will be back where we started, having to take this court by court by court. The Supreme Court today said the president overstepped his authority vis-a-vis the U.S. law and international law, and nothing in Congress, as far as I can see, can fix that in a way that will simply allow this process to continue. We'll be joined in our last hour by somebody who knows way more about this than I do, and somebody who could actually talk about what good these Guantanamo detentions are when it comes to intelligence, and just why it was that so many in the military this week applauded the Supreme Court decision, because they fear what will happen to U.S. service personnel if the U.S. models behavior to the effect that you can throw out Geneva if you feel like it and treat the soldiers of another country or the combatants of another country however you like. They fear what that would mean for our soldiers. And they, as far as I could see, were applauding the Supreme Court decision tonight and would not support a congressional fix. All right, let's take some quick calls. Barton has been waiting for a long time in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. I don't know where that is. Where is Chambersburg, Barton?
Good evening, Laura. How are you? Well, it's in the south central part of Pennsylvania.
Are you
50 miles southwest of Harrisburg?
Are you wet there? Yeah, you would be wet there.
Yeah, we had quite a bit of rain the last few days, and there was some flooding and so forth, not as bad as some other areas. I kind of am reserved, as you are, about the decision by the Supreme Court, but I think it's a good day, and hopefully, I was very upset when several years ago when I heard Rumsfeld announce that so-called enemy combatants are not entitled to the Geneva Convention, and I thought to myself, well, suppose a foreign nation decided that they don't like the way we run our government, and they sent their soldiers over here to the United States, and I picked up my pellet gun and shot at one of them, and I got captured. Would I be considered an enemy combatant?
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know the answer to that. Interestingly, George Bush, President Bush, who is always talking about protecting us, shortly after 9/11, he gave a speech. And after the speech, a reporter asked him if he thought that the people that had done the damage to the terrible damage to the United States could do the same thing again. And he answered them, they've already given it their best shot. Not too many people remember that, but I do recall
that. Well, then somebody said, wait a minute, you gotta tell the American public that the best shot might be around the corner if they let, I don't know, John Kerry become president. You can't suggest that the best shot is in the past. We've got to constantly rule on fear, which means constantly producing a specter of worse destruction than we've ever seen.
And I think that the destruction is more than we even understand, because we're making enemies around the world, and people won't buy our products. It's not only the governments that we support or support us, but the people themselves have such a terrible dislike.
Right, and the president has no response to that, does he, Barton? I mean, when he was in Europe the other week, and it was brought to his attention that every possible poll of the continent shows people put the United States as the greatest threat to their lives, he said, well, that's just ridiculous. But that is not an answer. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Let's go
Thank
to
you.
Phil. Bye-bye. Phil in New York. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm okay, Laura. How are you?
Oh, I'm well.
Okay, you probably answered that question many times already this evening. But nevertheless, I was calling. I live in New York City, and obviously we don't get Mike here. And I was hoping, I was taking a shot and hope that I got Mike.
Oh.
It's very cool that I got you, though, Laura.
You mean you're not listening? You just, like, wildly called out of the blue?
I didn't know what you were talking about, but, you know.
Well, at least this is somebody who wasn't listening who didn't know what I was talking about. If you were listening and didn't know what I was talking about, then I'd be in big trouble.
I didn't know that you were on, but the fact that you're on is certainly cool. And I was just calling because I wanted to hear some sane voice, and I knew Mike could provide that. And I certainly know you can as well.
Mike provides what my listeners call voice for the rest of our suppressed screams. He is the scream, they say, that the rest of us repress. So, yeah, I think that's about the most sane response out there these days to some of the insanity we have passing for government. So I'm glad you called in, Phil. Glad you're out there. And
yeah.
What are we going to do to get Mike back on the air in New York, huh?
That's a good question. That's in some way why I called. We need Mike back here. There's such a terrible hole in the night with Mike not on the air.
I'll tell him you said that there was a hole in the night. Well, I'm glad to just paper over the hole temporarily. Thanks for the call.
It's terrible that they took him away from us.
Well, you'll get him back. You'll get him back.
Fine.
All right. Let's hear from Steve in L.A. Hey, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Laura. How do you do?
I do pretty well.
You know, I'm kind of like that last guy in a way. I'm listening to K-Talk in Los Angeles, 1150, and that means that I'm not getting you on the radio now.
But you're calling for the sake of posterity.
Heck of it, because there's something I was meaning to get out that I thought might be helpful.
Sure.
I just keep postponing it because I don't have time to be hanging around waiting for people to answer the phone. But I had time now. And so I got you by luck, and I'll hear your show live at about, I mean, I'll hear your show.
You're speaking into your very own future?
Beg your pardon?
You are now speaking into your very own future.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, scary as hell, isn't it? I'm already scared.
All right, so for posterity.
For
posterity and for the L.A. listening audience 3 hours from now, which by the time they hear this will be now, and this is all getting very cosmic and quantum and confusing, what's your question?
I don't have a question, but I have a quote that I want to give to you that everybody ought to know, and I haven't been hearing for a long at all, so it's going to come out of me. And by the way, even before I do that, you started out with the Regal music and talking about that, and I just wanted to say to you, whenever I got a chance, I knew I would, and that is, I love you madly, quoting the late, great Duke Ellington.
Oh, right, so it's a quote.
Okay,
thanks.
Now the quote is, Mark Twain, during the Mexican War, so-called Mexican War, I don't know the correct historical term for it, but it was very similar to what we're dealing with now. And he wrote a column that said, everybody's talking about we're in there and we don't know how to get out of there once we're in there, and maybe something was wrong, but now we're in there. He says, hell, any burglar knows when you get caught, you go out the same way you came in. Now, that's almost verbatim, but I don't have it handy, but I can reference you that it is in a book that was printed about 30 years ago called Mark Twain, Social Critic. And I believe the author was Philip Foner.
Right.
Must not be in print, but it's around somewhere.
No, and Twain's articles on that war and the Philippine War are well worth a read. You're absolutely right. Thanks for the call, Steve.
Yeah.
And I hope that when 3 hours pass by, you get to hear yourself. And that'll be so interesting. All right, quickly, one more call, and then we will take a break. Maybe this current caller is actually listening to the program. Jay in Sarasota, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah.
Hey.
Are you
still here?
Are you listening to the program?
Yes, I am.
Hey, absolutely good. Very good.
Listen, I'm in Sarasota, Florida, where it is. You talk about one-sided down here. I mean, Florida, okay. I'm a cabbie part-time, and I listen to talk radio all day long. From 9 to 12, we have Jerry Springer. The rest of the day, we have Hannity. We have Rush Limbaugh. I mean, it's insane, Laura. I want to talk a little bit about bipartisan politics. We cannot lose hope. First of all, there's a couple of things here. I picked these people up in my cab recently, and not one of them was under 85 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a gentleman in the back seat, he was 98.
Mm-hmm.
And we started, for some reason, talking about politics. Of course, I watch myself talking with a lot of people around here about politics, which most folks are, in fact, lean to the right. But this guy amazed me. It was an honor to talk to him. He goes, we got to get this guy out of office. This guy is crazy. He really is crazy, Jay. He's a crazy person. Everybody else is agreeing. I go, sir, how old are you? 98 years old. I've been a Democrat all my life. Who cares if same-sex couples want to live together in a civil union? It's nobody's business. Why are we being interrupted with these kinds of things, ideas, and ideologies anyways? We have lots and lots of bigger problems to worry about. I couldn't believe this coming out of an elderly person.
Hey, listen to the elders.
I couldn't believe it, Laura. I was fascinated with this.
It's excellent.
And there's much more.
You know what, I gotta take a break. I gotta take a break. I love you, but I gotta take a break, all right? Sarasota, please stay safe down there. And yeah, listen to the elders. We have within our midst all the inspiration and push we need to make all the right changes here. We just need to listen and respond. Thanks for the call. We'll be back in a bit with Dave Zirin. We'll talk a bit about sports, politics, the Supremes, and you. 866-303-2270.
Oh, yeah. Here's another one. And another one, yeah. I'm Little Kim, the queen bee. This lady's night, what? It must be Angie on the mic. The butter pea, honey, got the sugar, got the spice. Roll the L tight, keep the rhymes right. Yo, I just made the motherfucker up last night. And I'm the rookie on this all-star team. Me and Kim is getting cream. Like Thelma and Louise, but on chrome. Never leave that Brooklyn shit alone. So if you say it's on, then it's on. Bang this in your whip.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the foreword, The Nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first 4 issues free.
Call now, 800-858-5800 for The Forward. That's 800-858-5800.
In the vegetable van with the horn that's honking like a mariachi band. In the middle of the street, people gather around. Put the dollar in the can. I wait. Chaos, the DJ cowboys hang around. Sleeping in the sidewalk with a Burger King crown. Never wake them up. Massive visit to the rooster crows. Vatos de gallos.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Mike Malloy. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dave Zirin. While Brad Friedman talks about the Francine Busby loss to Brian Bilbray as an example of why we need to repair our broken voting system, Dave has some other thoughts, and they speak to, well, the Democratic Party's candidate. We'll talk about that, and we'll also hear what Dave has to say about the government's reluctance to pass an immigration bill. And as the Soccer World Cup enters its final stages, we'll ask him which teams have impressed him the most and talk a little bit about the ways in which the tournament creates nationalism or helps erode the same. How's the U.S. coming out in all of this? We'll hear from Dave Zirin. He writes a regular column for paper in Maryland and also for The Nation magazine. His latest book is What's My Name, Fool? Sports and Resistance in the United States. And Dave will join us right after the break. And then in our next hour, Mel Goodman will be here, a longtime Intel veteran with the CIA. Mel Goodman has some thoughts on the Supreme Court decision, and maybe he can tell us, was this, as the White House spin machine is saying, simply a slip, a slap on the wrist that can be quickly fixed in Congress, or was it a hold up, stop up short, throwback, slap down of this Bush-Cheney crime family, and an instruction that they must abide by Geneva? Which was it? We'll hear when we come back, and I'll tell you what I think. Well, maybe you're already getting the idea. We're blogging and streaming at RadioNation.org, and you can write to me, Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at AirAmericaRadio.com. That's Laura at AirAmericaRadio.com. We'll be back with a whole lot more right after the break.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
I'm Bob Harris to tell you about my new Smart Balance Omega Plus Light Mayonnaise with flax oil and plant sterols. New Smart Balance Omega Mayo has 500 milligrams of omega-3s per serving, natural plant sterols to help offset cholesterol, and half the fat and calories of regular mayonnaise. Enjoy my new Smart Balance Omega Light Mayonnaise in salads and sandwiches. You get an omega-3 wallop in every tasty dollop of my new Smart Balance Light Mayonnaise.
The point of commercials is, of course, to get you to do something. For example, we'd like you to go to Geico.com and get a free rate quote. But if you're still not reaching for your mouse, at least do this for me. Call a friend who has Geico and ask some questions. Can Geico really save me that much money? Is their claim service as good as, well, they claim? Are they really available 24/7? Once you get your answers, we'll be right here.
Go to Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
back. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show here on Air America Radio. We're blogging and streaming at RadioNation.org, and you can write to me, Laura@AirAmericaRadio.com. That's Laura@AirAmericaRadio.com. What will happen to U.S. service personnel if the U.S. models the behavior of just blithely dismissing the requirements of the Geneva Convention? Zowie on the blog says, well, we saw what will happen. We saw what happened to two of our soldiers a couple of weeks back. Others are weighing in on my question, what do you think the Bush-Cheney crime family lawyers are doing tonight? I'm guessing that the White House will say that them not being allowed to suspend the Geneva rules and hold people at Gitmo for as long as they like is a violation of the crime family's civil rights. I think you might be onto something, Kirsten Johnson, and I think perhaps I should keep quiet about it because you might have just given them their perfect idea. Others are getting worried. Bushoid Crime Central comes up with legal spin for SCOTUS. Stop it! You're giving me weird bondage fantasies, says Zowie. All right, join the bloggers at RadioNation.org. You know, I didn't ask you what positions you thought the Bush lawyer legal team were getting themselves into. I just meant legal positions. Okay. All right. We should move quickly on to Dave Zirin. He is a writer of the intersection of sports and on the intersection of sports and politics. He's a regular contributor for The Nation and the LA Times. He's joining us by phone. Glad to have you, Dave. Glad to have you back.
Wonderful to be with you, Laura. Let's just not discuss legal briefs and we'll be okay.
Oh, I see where this whole conversation is going. You're right. Let's not go there. Quickly, there's so much on the headlines. You wanted to weigh in on the Busby-Bilbray race. We just heard from Brad Friedman, whose emphasis here is on the voting system. It looks completely cracked. But you say there's other things to worry about, too.
Oh, I certainly think so. I mean, first and foremost, let me say that I completely agree with the gentleman that the voting system in this country is completely cracked, that there's corruption, that people's votes aren't counted, that this is a reality of the voting system in the United States. That being said, I think the Busby election, or non-election, I should say, it's very similar to Bush-Gore or Bush-Kerry, where while there may have been malfeasance across the board, the real issue is the message of the Democratic Party. The real issue is the opposition candidate, because even if there is the worst corruption, even if you want to accept the worst-case scenario of votes literally just being eaten alive by the monster Diebold, but at the same time, you have to ask the question, why aren't people upset about that?
Well, they are. There were hearings, but you're right. They're not, like, in the streets refusing to go to work.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I think, has to do with the fact that people are more often than not voting against the Republican as opposed to voting for what the Democrat stands for. And this is certainly the case with Busby, because what was her central message in that campaign? It was, vote for me because you'll be voting against the cycle of corruption or the system of corruption that exists in a Congress of corruption. The problem with that, though, is that if you look at polls, people see the Democrats as corrupt as the Republicans.
Yeah, where they ever thought that this corruption story was going to be their silver bullet magic solution to take back the House this fall? They're dreaming.
They're absolutely dreaming.
I've been around the country. People's eyes glaze over. Corruption? Congress? What are you going to tell us that's new?
Yeah, seriously, what are you going to tell me next? The sky is blue? I mean, this isn't anything that resonates.
Well, it's kind of like we can do better. Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. And let me tell you about, and see how that worked for John Kerry. Let me tell you about this guy, Bilbray, too. I mean, Bilbray, you know, I wouldn't wipe him off of my shoe. I find him to be a completely noxious individual. But I can tell you from 3,000 miles away here on the East Coast what his position was on immigration. It was crystal clear. It rang from the mountaintops, and it was heard here in Maryland. I don't know what Busby's position was on it. I tried to find out. I mean, it zigged and zagged every which way. If you don't give people a clear alternative, if you don't make a coherent political argument, in this case, I would argue, if you don't make a coherent argument for amnesty, if you don't make a coherent argument for immigrant rights, then all you end up sounding like is mush.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you read that crystal clear stellar, alarm-ringing, rallying cry of a document that came from the Democratic leadership a couple of weeks back, A New Direction for America. I read it many times. I can barely remember a thing that was in it. So muddy was that text.
I'm telling you, if that was food, it would have been mashed potatoes. You know, you just would have eaten it, and then felt a little queasy afterwards, and you would have gotten nothing solid.
All right, let's move on that. We've gone from briefs to not-so-solid food. On the Gitmo ruling, how big a blow to the administration do you think?
Well, it's an interesting question. On the one hand, I mean, ideologically, I think it's a tremendous blow. I mean, what the analysis that's coming out about it is, it's not about an abstract notion of the Constitution, but has everything to do with Guantanamo being this failed structure of criminal corruption. And, I mean, it is viewed as simultaneous with violations of human rights. Not one person has been convicted out of Guantanamo.
Yeah, but you've only got 10 that have been even charged. Only 10 out of 759 have been charged. 300 so have been let go. This is a shame. This is an embarrassment.
It's an embarrassment. It's an international catastrophe. That's why even Bush at this point is saying, even in the wake of the ruling, that they're saying, well, we're now going to go to Congress. But then they also say, but eventually we do want to shut it down. So they want to make sure, even with the news releases about how the fight isn't over and they're going to take the fight to Congress to do illegal criminal court hearings, I mean, they still want it to be clear for an international audience that shutting it down is on the agenda. To me, that just says what an embarrassment, what a liability Guantanamo has become.
Interesting, Anzi, an emailer, Anzi, from Portsmouth, Virginia, writes, I'm sure Turd Blossom, Karl Rove, is at the helm tonight. I asked the listeners, what do they think the White House legal team were up to this evening?
And, I think they're...
But let me just tell you what Anzi says. Okay. She's saying she doesn't think it's the legal team in charge. She thinks it's Rove in charge. It's politics. Quote, they're corralling their lapdog representatives and senators to come up with red meat legislation to give Bush the okay to do whatever he wants to in Guantanamo. They'll start pushing that through when they're done with their summer vacation, just in time for the elections. Mark my words, Anzi writes, they'll turn it into yet another exercise in Democrats are wimps.
You see, I think that they're actually just singing their favorite show tunes from Springtime for Hitler. I mean, that's what they're going with. You know, it's interesting. We said the Democratic campaign strategy is pure mashed potatoes. The Republican campaign strategy actually sounds a lot better in its original German. But it still is nothing I would stand for.
Ouch. When we come back, we'll get you to talk about sports. I know you hate to address this.
Oh,
subject.
Gee.
Oh, I know. Well, take
not
your calls, too.
Zone.
866-303-2270. And take it from Christabel and Sia Boadi, our producer on Radio Nation. That third goal, or really, I guess it was the second goal in the Ghana v. Brazil match, it was definitely offside.
Oh, yeah.
No question. All right, when we come back, you're listening to Air America Radio, The Mike Malloy Show. We'll take some calls and we'll continue our conversation with Dave Zirin. His book, I really recommend it, What's My Name, Fool? Sports and Resistance in the United States. It came out earlier this year, I guess last year, from Haymarket Books. Yeah. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Randy Rhodes, and I think it's time we got serious about peace. Thousands of Iraqis and U.S. soldiers are suffering every day in a senseless war in Iraq. So Independence Day, hundreds of moms are going to put their own bodies on the line in a historic hunger strike against the war, organized by Code Pink. They're going to Washington, D.C. to eat their last meal on July 3rd at 5 o'clock in front of the White House. But you can fast wherever you are in your own community. All the info is at TroopsHomeFast.org. TroopsHomeFast.org.
Hey, True Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Are you as alarmed as I am by the assault on our freedoms by the religious right? An essential element of freedom is the right to choose or reject religious beliefs. And this is why I fully support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, as it takes the lead in challenging the growing threat from the religious right in the United States. If you'd like further information on the dangers of living in a theocracy, please call 800-335-4021, 800-335-4021, or visit their website, ffrf.org.
Cover for you. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Mike Malloy. You're listening to Air America Radio. Our number is 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. And you can write to me, Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at airamericaradio.com. Our guest of this hour is Dave Zirin, the sports columnist for the Prince George's Post in Maryland, and also also a regular contributor, let's put it that way, for The Nation and the L.A. Times. He writes about the intersection of sports and politics, but he can turn his brain to just about any subject under the sun. Let's take a couple of calls, and then, heck, maybe we'll let him talk about soccer for a while. Paul is on the line in California. Hey, Paul, welcome.
Hey, Laura, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
It's a pleasure to hear you in this format. I usually listen to you more for a kind of a cultural type of thing, but I wanted to talk to you about what Bush's response is going to be with the ruling.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think it's going to be similar to Andrew Jackson back during the Trail of Tears, or just before the Trail of Tears, when the Supreme Court told him he couldn't get the army to force the Cherokees out of Georgia. His response was, they made the ruling, let them enforce it. Right. Basically because court really has no enforcement, and I think that he believes that he's impeachment proof.
Well, you know, you're hearing, I suspect, in Bush's response to this decision, a lot of what I'm hearing, where he says, you know, well, we'll try to obey up to a point, but I'm not going to really change my practices. It's clear in his response that he's not going to be held up here, not for a minute.
Right. But the difference, though, between, I think, the caller...
Dave Zirin.
Oh, sure. Caller makes a very interesting parallel. But I'll tell you, like, the real difference, though, between Bush and Jackson is Jackson operated the Trail of Tears at a time where the number of non-Native Americans in the United States who would have stood up for the rights of Native Americans could fit into a van. But right now, when you're talking about Guantanamo Bay, when you're talking about erosion of civil liberties, these are not Bush's strong points. And I think if we are going to see any kind of resistance to Bush, I think you could possibly see it around this issue.
Well, even when you have the president coming out saying, I'm not going to be letting killers onto the streets, not that we know anybody in Guantanamo
yeah.
is a killer, and if they are, why haven't they been charged? And saying other things, too, like, well, you know, I'll try to abide by the Supreme Court, but I'm going to protect the people. These were dangerous men lifted up on the battlefield. Not true, either. 86% of the detainees there were actually turned over by Pakistani police and others. There is no indication to my mind that the president isn't right in thinking that the American people can be still riled by this sense that there are dangerous bad men in Guantanamo, and we may know the facts, but they don't if they're listening to Fox TV.
Well, that's certainly the case. But I think that if Bush attempts to go forward, I think the next step is we're going to have to see what happens in the Congress here as well. I mean, Frist has already said he's going to put this forward for a vote right away. This is red meat election time. I think once again it's yet another opportunity for the Democrats to show whether or not they have a spine. I'm not going to tell you where I think the smart money is on that in terms of standing up for this, which is a damn shame because when you look at the polls, and so I keep going back to this because it's so easy sometimes to think that the country is just in a sort of red state haze around the Bush fear rhetoric. But if you look at the polls, I mean, Bush is only even pulling a majority right now and over 50% in approval in four states in the entire country, for goodness sake.
Mm-hmm. And, we've seen on the war extraordinary, mm-hmm. not only a big shift of those polled towards the Democratic position on troop withdrawal, but a 10% shift among Republicans this week,
mm-hmm.
according to the Washington Post poll. 10% since December, more Republicans want a pull out with a date firm. Not clear what that date is, but they want a date firm.
Which is amazing when you consider that the Democratic position has been, you know, one side says, well, we won't cut and run, and the other side says, well, we won't cut and run. So even without a clear anti-war troops home alternative, you see people gravitating to that position just from the reality of their lives. I mean, when people read that 72% of the troops, for goodness sakes, want a timetable to come home, that should really tell people
yeah.
something.
And 87%, 90% of the Iraqis, who we're supposed to be there at the behest
yeah.
of.
Well, that's amazing, too. I mean, I'm sure you saw the recent poll of Iraqis that more of them said that they felt safe when the insurgents were around than when U.S. troops were around. It's just incredible.
It is a crying shame, although we should be doing more than crying. Sports, for one second.
Yes.
I haven't talked to you at all about the World Cup, but the usual question has been lurking in the back of my brain. When you see the crowds pouring into the street as they have this time around to participate in these sort of group watchings of the game, which are happening in every city, every community across the country, what's fun to me is that scene of people sort of pouring out of cafes, crowding into anywhere that has a TV set
yep.
tuned to the game. Are you seeing a sort of stirring up of nationalism, or are you seeing kind of the world brought together?
Honestly, it depends on the country. and it depends on the situation. I mean, just let me tell you what I mean by that. Like in Africa, from all the reports I've read, from all the newspapers I've read, there's been a remarkable coming together of the continent. When the Ivory Coast is playing, Namibia is watching. When Ghana is playing, Ivory Coast is watching. Nigeria is watching to see how Angola would do. I mean, so you have this incredible coming together, a kind of collective respite, if you will, from some of the problems that and death that's really stalked the continent over the last several years. In a place like Britain, it's frankly kind of scary. I mean, it's accompanied with a great deal of nationalism, just an absolute frenzy of it. That, once again, just reading the reports of it, 122 Brits were arrested last Saturday for throwing beer bottles at Germans. That's a little strange. And in the United States, I have to say, there's something that's been, I mean, in Washington, D.C. anyway, kind of beautiful about it. I mean, first of all, it's been beautiful because it hasn't been for the United States. I mean, most of the rooting and passionate rooting has come out of ethnic enclaves and neighborhoods in a way that's just, there's something boisterous and festive about it. Like in Washington, D.C., along U Street, where you have the Ethiopian and Eritrean bars, like you said, they're packed. There's a buzz. People are spilling out into the street. We have a series of Ghanaian restaurants and bars in that, the Adams Morgan neighborhood. I mean, you can imagine what that was like when Ghana was making their run. And the Irish pubs as well along Connecticut Avenue. I mean, just filled with people singing, drinking songs, drinking Guinness.
I'm sure that's true all over the country. Now, there was an interesting point that you made in a piece you wrote for The Nation recently about the American striker Eddie Johnson and his rhetoric regarding the World Cup.
Absolutely. I mean, Eddie Johnson's a young man. He's 21 years old or so. But it's worth looking at his comments where he said that the United States team, they were prepared for war. And that they said, we're like soldiers. We're here to stay and fight.
And everybody kind of just was boggled by the language, right?
Absolutely. And most people were boggled by it because, I mean, for all the hooliganism in soccer, for our football, I should say, for all the brawling and whatnot, that kind of militaristic posturing is something that's foreign to the sport. Yeah.
So what does that mean that we have become as a culture? And are we, our fans, maybe getting the message sitting in those stalls that, hey, other people don't pursue every international competition as war?
I think that's what's been the greatest thing about it. That, I mean, if Eddie Johnson had said those exact comments while wearing a football helmet or a baseball cap or basketball shorts, no one would have noticed. But it was about saying it in the setting of the World Cup. I mean, there's something about the American sporting DNA that's always linked sports and militarism. And that is just foreign. It's as foreign to people in other countries as the fact that we need scantily clad women to tell us when and when not to cheer. It's not something that translates.
We don't?
I mean, I don't think we do objectively. I tell you a story. I was at a football game.
You got about 30 seconds.
Sure. Half the crowd are women. It's Halloween. The cheerleaders come out wearing, let's just say, Halloween outfits. And you see this collective sigh among the women in the crowd as they do a mad exodus for the bathroom. So this isn't even about making money. It's about institutionalized sexism, and it can go to the birds.
Oh, Dave, you're great. Thanks so much for coming on. People want to read Dave's work. They can find him in The Nation. And you can also pick up his book, What's My Name, Fool, at your local independent bookstore. When we come back, more of your calls, and we'll try to get to the bottom of what happened in the Supreme Court today and what it requires from us to see some kind of enforcement of that ruling. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Mike Malloy. Ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read The Forward, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first four issues free.
Call now, 800-858-5800 for The Forward. That's 800-858-5800.
Air America Radio News, I'm Bill Crowley. Witnesses say Israeli warplanes hit offices of the Fatah movement at a Hamas facility in Gaza City. These raids followed an attack on the Palestinian Interior Ministry in Gaza City, among more than a dozen air attacks by Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, security officials are saying Israel is putting off a ground invasion into the northern Gaza Strip. Israeli tanks and troops moved into southern Gaza yesterday in the offensive to try to win the freedom for a captured Israeli soldier. The massing of forces on the northern border signaled a broader campaign, but at a meeting of security officials, the defense minister reportedly talked about the possibility of significant diplomatic developments. More Iranian defiance on that nuclear standoff with the U.S. and other countries. Iran's foreign minister says it will be August before Tehran responds to the international offer that would trade incentives for a stand down in their nuclear activities. UN allies wanted Iran to reply by next week. Iran's foreign minister says his nation has questions that can be settled in talks next month with top European Union diplomat. Meanwhile, he says Iran is seriously and carefully reviewing the proposed package that calls for Iran to suspend its enrichment program. In return, Iran would get peaceful nuclear technology and an end to some sanctions. It would also get trade opportunities, U.S. spare parts for aging jetliners, and Washington's participation in face-to-face negotiations. The FBI says today there's no sign anybody actually got their hands on the personal data of millions of U.S. vets and active-duty military service members on that stolen laptop computer. Veterans Affairs Secretary Jim Nicholson announcing today the computer has been recovered. It was stolen from a VA employee's home early last month. The computer had Social Security numbers and other data on up to 26.5 million veterans and military personnel. A statement from the Baltimore field office of the FBI says computer forensic experts determine the database remains intact and has not been accessed. Flood damage after the major rain on the East Coast closed the IRS headquarters in Washington for at least a month, but officials say tax cheats won't be getting a break. The IRS says operations are spread around the country, so services and tax enforcement will not be affected. 2,400 employees at the IRS headquarters, though, are going to be telecommuting, working in temporary offices, or moving to other locations. This is Air America Radio.
Supreme Court has now rendered its judgment in the Hamdan case, and it is now the obligation of the administration, which the president, who controls the executive branch, to figure out how to proceed to create laws, to execute laws that are consistent with the Supreme Court's holding.
Oops, the White House Press Secretary Tony Snow there slipping into a rhetoric that might suggest that there's such a thing as administration authority rather than just the pure president acting alone. That was the Press Secretary Tony Snow responding to the decision in the Supreme Court today in the case Hamdan v. Rumsfeld. Summed up in a nutshell, Rumsfeld lost. I'm Laura Flynn. Sitting in for Mike Malloy. You can call me on 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. You know, we are talking tonight about what to make of this important decision at the Supreme Court. On the one level, it was a lucky break in that the Bush team, I mean, A, brilliant lawyers, well argued, all the rest of it, and obvious violation by the administration of both the Geneva Conventions and U.S. law. On the other hand, the lucky break came in that it was a 5-3 decision that would have been 5-4 if Bush's Judge Roberts hadn't had to recuse himself, because he'd already come down on the wrong side of this case at the appellate court when he sat there. This is a sobering moment, I've said this evening, for those of us with an eye on the court. If Roberts had not had to recuse himself, it would have been a bit of a narrower decision, 5-4, and if we lose one more justice, the slim majority that hung on here will be even potentially in the majority no more. Thomas, Scalia, Alito, all dissenting from this decision. Roberts, we know what side he stood on. He's stated it before. There's been, since the decision came down, since the verdict came down, a chorus from the White House spinmeisters trying to say, oh, this is, the court did nothing very serious here. It didn't really talk about Geneva. We don't have to obey Geneva. What this was just about was about the president not abiding by the constitutional commitment to consult Congress on the creation of these military tribunals. But we're going to sort that out in a matter of days. Well, the Washington Post, for one, aren't buying it. Peter Baker and Michael Abramowitz have a very strong piece in Friday's Washington Post. I'll just read you a little bit, and then we'll go to calls. For 5 years, President Bush waged war as he saw fit. If intelligence officers needed to eavesdrop on overseas telephone calls without warrants, he authorized it. If the military wanted to hold terrorism suspects without trial, he let them. Now the Supreme Court has struck at the core of his presidency and dismissed the notion that the president alone can determine how to defend the country. In rejecting Bush's military tribunals for terrorism suspects, the High Court ruled that even a wartime commander-in-chief must govern within constitutional confines significantly tighter than this president has believed appropriate. For many in Washington, this piece goes on, the decision echoes not simply as a matter of law, but as a rebuke of a governing philosophy of a leader who at repeated turns has operated on the principle that it is better to act than to ask permission. This ethos is why so many supporters find Bush an inspiring leader, and why many critics in this country and abroad react so viscerally against him. I do think that they have put their finger on one thing, which is that Bush speaks to the very part of some people that wants a unitary executive, which is to say a dictatorship, that wants a leader that just acts without concern for the repercussions of those actions to the fabric of our laws, of our society, that just wants someone to tell them what to do and say that they're going to look after us, take the responsibility out of our hands, you do it. What they're talking about here is the same ethos that did appeal to Germans in the pre-World War II period. And I think it's very critical that you've now got the Washington Post saying this is where we stand as a country. Those who are attracted to that ethos And let's face it, there are a zillion reasons why you might be. You might just be tired. You might be exhausted. You might be afraid. You might be overburdened. You might have a preacher telling you that this is the way to go. Obey the Father, and the Father of the nation is the president. The Father of the president is the Lord. You could have a universe of reasons why your own particular parent behaved this way, or you were brought up this particular way. There's any number of reasons why you would be vulnerable to a leader that said, I'll lead, you sit there. But what this decision is doing is getting to the very heart of the philosophy of this administration, which is, we'll do whatever the heck we want. Better to act than ask permission, which just happens to run contrary to our Constitution, which was framed by people who had seen that kind of one man, one rule, monarchical control, and who said, we can do better than that as a nation. We as a nation can be a nation for, by, with the people. By, with, for the people, even. A nation of laws, not a nation of monarchs. A nation of interrelationships of communities deciding how they would respond to the crises and the opportunities that present themselves. This nation was founded on the refutation of exactly this ethos that the Bush administration embodies, which is, we know best. Follow the leader. This isn't supposed to be a follow the leader nation. This is supposed to be a we're in this together nation. This is supposed to be we are smarter together than we are individually nation. And this is supposed to be a nation where a body of laws written and corrected and improved gradually over the years, binds us into a relationship amongst each other such that there are checks and balances between our branches of government. This decision tonight, I think the Washington Post is right, gets to the very heart of the ethos of this administration. And it is the debate that we need to be having. But what is the Bush administration doing? They're sending us off to talk about how Congress can maybe fix it. That is not what this Supreme Court decision had in mind. A little bit later, we will hear from Mel Goodman, a senior fellow and director of the National Security Program at the Center for International Policy. He spent 24 years at the CIA in international relations and more. He'll be our guest and he'll help us decode some of this. But I urge you to check out this piece in the Washington Post Friday. Peter Baker and Michael Abramowitz, it just went up online at WashingtonPost.com. We've got an interesting caller on the line, Ray in Georgia. Hi, Ray. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Laura?
I'm good. Are you on a speakerphone? It sounds a little boomy.
No, it's not a speakerphone. It's a cell phone.
All right, all right.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. So I had asked a little bit earlier, you know, what, how are different people, how are different communities, professions responding to this Supreme Court decision? And I said that the military were on the side of those who say at all costs we must abide by Geneva, because this is a two-way contract. The way we treat others will have a relationship on the way they treat us. And you wrote me an email saying you agree and that you have some particular expertise in this area. You just retired.
That's right. Just this year.
And what had you done until you retired?
I was a senior Army warrant officer in the field of interrogation.
So your perspective on all this?
My perspective is that the Supreme Court is absolutely right that we must abide by the Geneva Conventions. And indeed, the military was trained. I was trained for that for over 20 years. Hmm. And for the administration to turn that around and say that we don't need to abide that indeed they're quaint, the Geneva Conventions, goes against everything that any professional interrogator will tell you.
Now, you are in this business, so you've been in this situation. I mean, Bush says these are dangerous men, these are bad men. We've no evidence of what men we have in Guantanamo, but if you even just take him at his word, imagine you are an interrogator there in Guantanamo and you believe this fellow detainee might have information that you need. What holds you back as an interrogator from just saying, oh, to heck with Geneva, we need to just, you know, apply the thumbscrews or the, you know, the equivalent?
I understand. I've heard these thumbscrew jokes for a number of years.
I'm sure.
No problem.
What holds you back?
What holds me back is Well, first of all, my core convictions. And second of all, any professional interrogator will tell you that the thumb screws don't work in terms of getting accurate information. You can't know that that information is accurate. Any form of torture will result in the person making a statement, but you don't know if he's just making it to stop the torture.
Right.
And I have never participated in, and as a senior warrant officer, I was in a position to say I will not participate in anything like that.
Right.
Junior personnel have another problem altogether. In that if the order comes down, they're not in the same position I was to say no.
So, are you alone? Are you hearing from your former colleagues?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I say, every one of them will say we don't need these authorizations that come from the vice president's office mostly that say go ahead and do it, and we're saying we don't need it.
Right. Well, do we not need it?
No, we don't.
We're not doing that great, it seems to me, on actually developing good intelligence. I mean, heck, we just had a laptop with all of these veterans' details on them. They couldn't even track that back except for by offering a reward. I mean, one of the arguments the administration makes is this is a new situation. We're in a new environment. We need new tools. And, you know, we need to be able to do things we never did before.
I will tell you this, all these people making decisions on that are not trained in interrogation.
Right.
They don't know. Mm. They think we need it, so they authorize it, and all us professionals are saying, no, we don't need it.
Right. Well, we need you to speak up, Ray. We need you. We need your colleagues to speak. I mean, this is what is so shameful about this administration. At every turn, shutting down the questions about why. It's been the same way since 9/11, where people wanted to answer and have the conversation. Why did this happen? We were told to shut up and get along with war because we didn't have time to have the conversation about why. Today, we've had a slew of scandals where media have reported on illegal surveillance activities, and the purpose of the reporting is to reveal that there are debates happening inside government with people like yourselves and others saying this is not a matter of, you know, political ideology. This is a matter of effectiveness. Is what we are doing the best way to produce a more peaceful environment, to get more accurate information, to avoid more violence and death in the future? And people like yourself are saying, no, it's not. This is not effective. It doesn't sound ideological to me. It sounds based on your professional expertise.
Absolutely. It's not ideological at all. Yes, I am a Democrat, but it's not motivated by that. It's just motivated by experience that this will not work, and logically it doesn't work.
Right. Well, I want to thank you, Ray, for calling in. Please stay in touch with us, and I hope that as Ray McGovern and others have said, that there will be a growing chorus of professionals like yourself that need to speak out. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come right back. We'll be joined by Mel Goodman very soon. Stay tuned. You're listening to Air America Radio.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Charlie Pickett here for Amdro. Did you know that some ants actually prefer living in your home? That's why you need to know about Amdro Ant Block. It stops ants cold on the outside. Just sprinkle Amdro Ant Block around the foundation of your home. You see, Ant Block's a bait. Ants take it back to the colony where they share it and die, right down to the queen. Amdro Ant Block. Stop them on the outside before they come inside.
The point of commercials is, of course, to get you to do something. For example, we'd like you to go to Geico.com and get a free rate quote. But if you're still not reaching for your mouse, at least do this for me. Call a friend who has Geico and ask some questions. Can Geico really save me that much money? Is their claim service as good as, well, they claim? Are they really available 24/7? Once you get your answers, we'll be right here.
Go to Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Talking about George W. Bush. All right, I'm Laura Flanders. In just a bit, we'll be joined by Mel Goodman, a former professor of international security studies and for 24 years, senior analyst and division chief at the CIA. Mel will join us in just a sec to talk about the Supreme Court decision today on Guantanamo, Geneva, and more. But first, let's take one more call. Chuck in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Laura. Enjoying your program.
Good.
About the identity theft, if I had some insider information. There were individuals such as case managers do take home those discs, and yes, they do have classified information on them. The stuff on the disc, I'm not sure if it was intentional or unintentional. Perhaps somebody broke into that person's residence knowing that what they wanted, or just maybe somebody just got lucky about it.
I mean, for people to be clear, we're talking about the stolen laptop computer and hard drive with sensitive data on up to 26.5 million veterans and military personnel. They're saying, and we heard at the top of the news, that there's evidence that this information was not accessed. Can you really be clear about that? Be sure?
Yeah, well, see, I'm former Air Force Police and Special Operations and all that, and I do know for a fact, apparently, that that they do take home classified information. What we need to do is we need to, I guess, subpoena sorts to find out, you know, is this really necessary for these case managers? And particularly, I'm a vet that got out the military, and I don't appreciate them bringing that information home classified, because if I brought home classified data, I'd be going to the jail.
Yeah, remember what happened to Wenho Lee? He was all...
Exactly.
I mean, it's just extraordinary. What cannot a government employee take home these days? Yep. They're taking home our voting machines. They're taking home our personal data. Chuck, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. After the first Gulf War, they said all the vets' records, particularly their health records, had simply, well, burnt up in a fire. What are they going to say now? 866-303-2270. Mel Goodman will join us right after the break. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike.
Secret hiding places, being daily satisfied. I can see you sitting and reading it while you hang your head and cry.
Hi, I'm Randy Rhodes, and I think it's time we got serious about peace. Thousands of Iraqis and U.S. soldiers are suffering every day in a senseless war in Iraq. So Independence Day, hundreds of moms are going to put their own bodies on the line in a historic hunger strike against the war, organized by Code Pink. They're going to Washington, D.C. to eat their last meal on July 3rd at 5 o'clock in front of the White House. But you can fast wherever you are in your own community. All the info is at TroopsHomeFast.org. TroopsHomeFast.org.
My one favorite spread has been Smart Balance Buttery Spread. I'm Bob Harris, and I've got another favorite spread that I think you'll love. It's new Smart Balance Omega Peanut Butter. It contains no hydrogenated oil, no trans fatty acid, no refined sugar, all natural ingredients, and 1,000 milligrams of omega-3s per serving. New Smart Balance Omega Peanut Butter with 1,000 milligrams of omega-3. We deep roast premium quality peanuts to make it taste great.
Charlie Pickett here for Amdro. Now, I don't know anybody that likes ants. That's why you need to know about Amdro Ant Block. Ant Block keeps ants out of your house, and it wipes them out where they live, outside. Just sprinkle Amdro Ant Block around the foundation of your home. You see, Ant Block's a bait. Ants take it back to the colony where they share it and die, even the queen. Amdro Ant Block. Stop them on the outside before they come inside.
The point of commercials is, of course, to get you to do something. For example, we'd like you to go to GEICO.com and get a free rate quote. But if you're still not reaching for your mouse, at least do this for me. Call a friend who has GEICO and ask some questions. Can GEICO really save me that much money? Is their claim service as good as, well, they claim? Are they really available 24/7? Once you get your answers, we'll be right here.
Go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
We'll be right back.
The court said you can't evade American law and international law, and the Geneva Conventions and all its protections apply to everything that you do wherever you do it. It is this unbelievable reaffirmation of the rule of law.
That was Barbara Olshansky of the Center for Constitutional Rights speaking with our very own Christabel Ncia Boadi for Air America Radio Headline News earlier today, responding to the Supreme Court's decision in Hamdan v. Rumsfeld. We're talking tonight about which is it? Is the verdict exactly what Barbara says it is there, an unbelievable reaffirmation of the rule of law, U.S. and international, or is it what the Bush administration spin mice have been saying all afternoon, merely a wrist slap that we need to fix at Congress? Well, somebody's going to try to parse the verdict for us is Mel Goodman. He's a senior fellow and director of the National Security Program at the Center for International Policy. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Mel, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
Which is it? In your view, it feels to me as if we were clear it was one thing in the morning, and then by the time Tony Snow had his way with the press, everything got a little bit more confused.
Well, I think the problem is that it's a little bit of each. Clearly, this is a major setback for the Bush administration that for the past 5 years, certainly since 9/11, has been establishing all the ingredients of a national security state, a militarized state, illegally using the National Security Agency to engage in warrantless eavesdropping, illegally using the CIA to set up secret prisons and conduct torture and abuse and engage in extraordinary renditions, turning suspects over to other governments where these people have been tortured, and the Defense Department has set up a counterintelligence field activity, which is operating with 1,000 people under a secret budget. But now, for the first time in nearly 5 years, the Supreme Court has said that the military tribunals that the Bush administration wanted to conduct the military trials for these suspects at Guantanamo are a violation of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, in other words, American military and domestic law, and a violation of Common Article 3 of the Geneva Convention, which John Yoo from the Justice Department called a very quaint convention when he wrote some of the torture memos for the president.
That's right.
But there's also an element that this could be, as the administration would say, just a technical issue or a technical setback or a glitch, because already the administration is making contact with their Republican allies on the Hill to try to find legislation to get around the Supreme Court decision to go ahead with military trials. And this is the real concern, that for the past 5 years, the Congress has been rolling over in front of the Bush administration, whether it was some of the egregious aspects of the Patriot Act or going to war on the basis of lies from the CIA about weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist, or contacts between Saddam Hussein and bin Laden that never took place, the way the Judiciary Committee is rolling over in front of the warrantless eavesdropping of NSA. My concern right now is we don't have real checks and balances. We don't have a separation of powers.
No, and we've got them saying today, Bush saying that he's going to go and to the extent that there's latitude to work with Congress, we'll find an avenue. You know, where the Congress haven't rolled, the Bush administration, namely the president, has crossed his fingers behind his back when he signed their laws, and as in the stop torture requirement from Congress, he just simply signed a signing statement that says, I won't abide by it. So,
well, he signed 100 of these statements now for various pieces of legislation, and saying
I read 750.
He will enforce those aspects of the law that he thinks are pertainable to a particular situation in the United States and ignore others. And it's time for the Judiciary Committee of the Senate to call the administration to task on this. But again, we've seen nothing but an AWOL Senate on all of these matters. And to me, you almost have a definition of tyranny here, because if you accumulate all the powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary powers in the same hands, in this case, in the hands of the White House or the hands of the Bush administration, you have the ingredients, if not the definition, of tyranny. Now, with this decision, you at least have five individuals on the Supreme Court. You had the predictable three who voted against this decision, and there would have been four if Chief Justice Roberts could vote, but he had to recuse himself because he was involved in the appeals court decision in the first place. And it's kind of interesting now that the Chief Justice, with his decision, was overruled in terms of his vote on the appeals court.
That's right.
So I still think this is a very good sign But it doesn't mean that the game is over in terms of the militarization that has been taking place in this country for far too long.
Yeah, I mean, when you say it's almost the definition of tyranny, we're losing track of what exactly is in that little space covered by the word almost. It's not too clear to me anymore. Cootie Girl on the blog says, I know what Bushko is going to do about the SCOTUS ruling, the Supreme Court ruling. They'll do absolutely nothing. They'll simply say they're going to rework their plan, pass some bogus legislation, and then keep doing exactly what they are doing. They might put on some sort of dog and pony show. They might even close Gitmo, but they'll just move it to another location. Nothing will change.
This decision doesn't say anything about Guantanamo. So right. The one thing that Bush administration could do is just exactly that, do nothing. There's still 450 prisoners in Guantanamo. 310 or so have been released. 80 have been considered for trial. There are another 10 who were faced with trial until the Supreme Court decision today, but he could do nothing. Looking at Guantanamo as outside of the United States, which was part of the plan of the Defense Department and the White House in setting up Guantanamo in the first place, and therefore outside of the reach of the judiciary and the Supreme Court. And that's the dangerous thing about the Bush administration. They have found some avenue, some point of departure, some interpretation, some sanction or some precedent for all of this activity, whether it was preemptive war or the misuse of intelligence, or again, the warrantless eavesdropping, or the state secret privilege to keep Americans from going to court on national security issues because the administration says state secrets are involved and the courts have upheld this interpretation. The Bush administration sent secret teams of CIA and Pentagon agents into the National Archives in Washington, D.C. to reclassify documents that had been declassified almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So all of this is taking place under the national security rubric, and it's all extremely dangerous.
Orrin Hatch today on the floor of the Senate said, we cannot, it would have been a disaster to have these people tried, referring to the detainees at Guantanamo, tried in U.S. civilian courts. Why is that again exactly?
Well, I think Hatch and others are trying to argue that in order to put these people on trial, we would have to bring intelligence information to bear, and therefore we would compromise sources and methods. But that's nonsense. We put Massawi on trial, and there were no compromises of sources and methods. There may have been a protracted process in trying Massawi, but the fact of the matter is most of the people in Guantanamo were picked up in just a random grab of people who happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. When I was at the CIA for 24 years, and every now and then I would be involved in debriefing defectors. And the rule of thumb clearly shows that if you don't get information, good information from a defector, soon after they come over or soon after a capture is made, you're not going to get any good information at all. They have when they have been picked up. And the longer you wait to get this information, and now we're talking about people who've been in these jails for nearly 4 years.
They've been there since January of 2002.
Yeah, they don't have any information to really bring to bear at this point. And we've learned also that if you torture these people, and of course we've tortured people in Guantanamo, and some people in this country think we only tortured Abu Ghraib and nowhere else. The fact of the matter is we've tortured all of the military and CIA facilities, including the CIA secret prisons in Eastern Europe. Then you get information such as we did from the Libyan agent Al Libby, who supposedly gave us the information about the contacts between Saddam Hussein and bin Laden. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out he was tortured by the Egyptians, and he recanted. He took back all of the information. None of it was true. He wanted the torturing to stop.
We just heard from a highly placed military interrogator, just retired, who said, absolutely, we this is an ideological. We know this does not work.
Oh, no, and the FBI has gone to the CIA in private to tell CIA counterparts, stop the use of torture. The only way you get good information from people in a situation like this is to try to co-opt them somehow, to show them that somehow this institution is going to take better care of you than the institution you were previously affiliated with. And then, if you're lucky, you can get them to talk. But torture, It just doesn't work, and we know it doesn't work. And I've talked to CIA professionals on this subject who know it doesn't work. Mm. This is a military that's now running amok, and it's not about six or seven enlisted people in the United States Army. It's about people at the level of Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld and people such as John Yoo, who's now a professor at the University of California Law School in Berkeley, who wrote the memo, basically wrote the torture memos. And it's about people such as the former director of CIA, Porter Goss, who actually accompanied various government officials in going to Senator McCain to try to get an exemption for the CIA for the torture ban. In other words, an American official, an American citizen, actually asked for an exemption so his people could torture captives. I can't even imagine that an American would place himself in that situation.
We're talking with Mel Goodman, 24 years of the CIA. When we come back, Mel, I'd love to get your take. You know, this is an administration. This is a crew. The Mike Malloy, who's normally in this chair, says it's the Bush-Cheney crime family. This is a crew who seems to me are often motivated by nothing more sophisticated than revenge. And going back into the history of some of the players in this White House, you have a lot of people who still resent the way that in the Carter administration, in the wake of Watergate and Vietnam and Chile and you name it, the wings of the CIA, if you will, were kind of trimmed. This is an administration that traces at least some of its thinking back to that period, trying to unravel what happened in that era. Is this a part of the picture that we're seeing today?
I think the revenge part is true, but I don't agree with the feeling that Cheney and Rumsfeld felt that the wings of the CIA were clipped. What the Cheney and Rumsfeld are trying to do is shut down the CIA. They look at the CIA as a liberal institution that hasn't supported hardline administration positions. And I can go back and tell you about the period when Cheney was the chief of staff to Gerald Ford and Donald Rumsfeld was the secretary of defense for Gerald Ford, and they tried to move the CIA to the right. So clearly there's a revenge element, but it has to do with moderate foreign policy and traditional American foreign policy. It has to do with opposition to arms control, opposition to disarmament, opposition to any kind of detente with the former Soviet Union. And you even have elements now that include Cheney and Rumsfeld that are trying to start another Cold War with Russia. That's the only way you can interpret the ridiculous speech that Vice President Cheney gave in Lithuania last month. So I think the revenge element is true, but the CIA is part of the enemy as far as people such as Cheney and Rumsfeld are concerned.
Yeah, Rumsfeld likes to create his own intelligence.
Exactly. He created the Office of Special Plans with their own intelligence.
It would tell him
forces,
exactly what
collection.
He wanted.
And they had Judith Miller at the New York Times, who acted as a conduit to print all of this crap.
And they loved the New York Times when it was leaking that information.
Exactly.
All right, when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. I'll tell you what we have in store for you tomorrow. Great show lined up for tomorrow night, and we'll maybe get in a couple of your calls. I'm Laura Flanders. We're talking with Mel Goodman. You can get more information about Mel right after the break. Stay tuned.
Ain't no chain strong enough to hold me. Ain't no breeze big enough to slow me. I never have seen a river that's too wide.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the Forward, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first four issues free.
Call now, 800-641-2626 for the forward. That's 800-641-2626.
I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. One more great night coming up. Reverend Yearwood will be with us from the Hip Hop Caucus on the latest from New Orleans. We'll also talk with Bob Watada, the father of Aaron Watada. He'll be calling us from his home in Hawaii. His son is now, as I understand it, in detention for refusing to deploy with his unit to Iraq, the first commissioned officer to make that decision. Reverend Yearwood, Bob Watada, we'll have a great night. Glad to have you with us, or rather, glad to hope that you'll be with us tomorrow. Mel Goodman is with us on the line. We've got a couple of callers awaiting to get in some thoughts. Let's hear quickly from, well, first off, Mike in Seattle. Hey, Mike, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I have some concerns about the decision today, even though it certainly was a no-brainer decision the right way. And that is, I think it was Justice Roberts had already ruled against, in favor of Bush when he was in the Court of Appeals, so he took no part in this decision. which basically means that four of the five justices on the court currently would have upheld the way things were going. And what I'm concerned about is the next one of the centrist or open-minded justices to leave the court is going to open yet another appointment, and then I think we're going to lose that.
We're doomed. No, well, that's why I called this the last hurrah for this particular majority. Back to you, Mel. I mean, I do think progressives, people concerned about civil liberties, human rights, you name it, international law, and the balance of forces, the Constitution, you name it, we would do well to be quite sober in our response to this.
This is a very frightening situation because Justice O'Connor is now off the court. She was the swing vote. The swing vote is now Arthur Kennedy, but Arthur Kennedy takes the swing vote to the right of O'Connor, so it makes it a much more perilous situation. And the person I worry about is the person who wrote the majority decision today, Judge Stevens. He's in his mid-80s. He appears to be healthy, but the man is 85 years old, and this is extremely worrisome. One more vote, and Roe v. Wade could be reversed. That's the kind of court that we're dealing with. And this is an automatic foursome now. When you look at Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, you really have one individual, Scalia, with four votes. And this is the kind of court that Bush has now created.
Is there any constitutional question, or has it, maybe there's not a question, but has it ever happened before that you've got a chief justice, the majority on the bench, decide against, if you know what I mean?
Well, I can't recall a situation where basically a chief justice has been overruled so early in his term that sets such an incredible precedent for the kind of judgment of this particular Chief Justice. But I think this was quite predictable, and I think those of us who watched the hearings knew what was happening. The Democrats did a very poor job, I think, of challenging Roberts and particularly in challenging Alito. But they were limited as the minority party, and that's why these November elections are so important, because it's the appointment power of the president that's so important. We look at the decision-making capabilities of a president, but remember, he appoints thousands of individuals in his term of office, including, in this case, several Supreme Court justices. And Bush has really set back the clock in many ways with his various appointments at all levels of the government.
Geneva, how do we keep international law in this picture when it looks like it's going to turn to the Congress and be about a congressional battle, probably with a view to that election this fall, setting Democrats against those who would stand firm and protect the American people?
Well, this is a major victory for international law, though. And talking about Common Article 3 of the Geneva Convention and the fact that the United States has signed on to the Geneva Convention overrules John Yoo's position when he was in the Justice Department, when he dismissed the Geneva Convention as a quaint document. So this is a major victory. This is still a country of laws. I think this has been a shot across the bow of the Bush administration. I think there are limits on how far they can go. Clearly, there have been reversals of patterns of torture and abuse. The CIA has been made very nervous by some of the recent decisions. I thought it was very interesting that the military lawyer who defended Hamdan, who talked about this as a great victory and said this is now shows that the United States can't be scared out of who we are. And it was interesting that this was a military lawyer in uniform who said this.
We got to go. Goodman is the author of Bush League Diplomacy, How the Neoconservatives Are Putting the World at Risk, and his most current book, The Decline and Fall of the CIA, will be out this fall. We'll invite him back. Mel Goodman, thank you so very much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Stay tuned to Air America Radio. I'll be back, Laura Flanders, same time, same place, tomorrow night. Stay tuned.
Look at your radio. Kind of cool, right? From somewhere far, far away, progressive voices are beamed directly to wherever you are on Air America Radio. You know, there's so much to say. We've tried archiving previous shows inside that radio of yours. We've tried stuffing it full of video feeds of Al Franken, Jerry Springer, The Majority Report, and more. But that part doesn't seem to be working. So the really great stuff that won't fit inside your radio is available right now from Air America Premium. We tried stuffing the homepage in your radio, but that didn't work either, so please use your computer instead. Find out about Air America Premium today at airamericaradio.com.
Summer's here, and that means lots of disgusting little ants marching through your yard and into your home. Used to be almost impossible to get rid of them, but not anymore. Now there's Grant's Ant Stakes, and they're guaranteed to work. Grant's ant steaks are different. They contain a unique baiting system that ants simply can't resist. They eat the bait, they share it with the rest of the colony, and they all die. Total colony elimination. Grant's kills ants. Guaranteed. Look for Grant's at your favorite stores and take control.